You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 20th, 2018, and episode number 351. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And my gosh, what a weekend. We'll talk about my weekend. My week, too. It's been a week. I know you don't want to hear about me, but we're going to talk about that. Anyway, it's my show, right? So we'll talk about that. Anyway, you're also going to want to hear about the news, I guess. And we're going to talk about that big Bigfoot story that's been floating around. And if you've listened to the show, you should have known it was coming because we've talked about it for months. Suing over Bigfoot. What's to gain and what's to lose? And we'll also talk about Bigfoot gets a big fork. And we'll talk Black Panthers in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to ask you the question, and I want you to ponder it. Over the next 40 minutes or so, how would you react to the news of the discovery of an alien species? Think about that. Don't answer it now. Let it ramble around in your brains. And we'll also have the book of the week, and who knows what else. I'm sure we'll cause some trouble in the interim. And this week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics, to quantum physics, to cosmology, to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. You don't have to do it now. Just do it sometime in the next 24 hours and check it out. There's a lot of great classes, tons of great information on there as well. Well, yeah, it's been a long week. I haven't seen you guys in a week since last Tuesday. And in case you weren't aware, I might have mentioned this over the course of the last, 6 months or so. Over the weekend on Saturday, I was the host of the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, which took place on Saturday. And, you know, I don't want to brag or anything. And I thought it would turn out to be at least an okay event. I figured stuff's going to happen. Things are going to go wrong. People won't show up. And who knows? But it ended up being a very special night, a very, very good event, in my opinion. And this is from somebody who has been to a lot of these events. And a lot of the speakers, most of which who have been to a lot of these events, also said that. And I don't think they were just saying that to be nice. I think they were genuine about that. It was a very, very fun, magical night. And, you know, it was, you get there early Saturday morning to set up. A lot of the vendors were coming in about just before 9 o'clock. The event opened officially at 10 o'clock a.m. So some of the vendors were coming in to set up. Nora Custer was one of the first to set up. She had a lot of jewelry and just a variety of metaphysical type of things, crystals and the smudge sticks and little shelves and all these things to put your sticks in, all that fun stuff. So she set up two tables, and then some of the other vendors trickled in, and the speakers started to come in. Aaron was one of the first speakers, and he was the first speaker of the day. So it's always good to see your first speaker of the day show up, and just kind of got with everybody and laid down some of the stuff that was going to be happening during the afternoon, and where they could find everything, what was going to be going on, just so everyone was in the know, and just kind of watching everyone come in the door and trying to help all these issues and problems. The next thing I know, it's everything's relaxed, and everything just seemed like it kind of more or less took care of itself. I guess that's what good preparation does. And it was a very good time. I even had a good time thinking, you know, my thought process is when you're emceeing this and you're putting this on and you're having to get with the all the speakers, make sure their presentations are ready or what kind of things do they need, taking care of all of them, and then taking care of making sure the food's coming and food's taken care of and all these things, that I would be so stressed out. But it really wasn't the case. I actually had a lot of time to mix and mingle and talk with people and make sure everything was going okay for them. Still would not have had enough time, I don't think, to speak. So I'm glad I made that choice to not be a participant in the speaking. But I did MC everything. I did introduce all of the speakers and talked about a variety of things during that as well. And all in all, it turned out to be a fantastic time. I think everybody did enjoy it. The food was really interesting. I took a chance on catering, which is a very, it wasn't the largest expense, the second largest expense, but it generates a very substantial cost. But I felt that being on February 17th in Northeast Ohio, I didn't want to put anybody at risk having to go out and eat, you know, lunch in the middle of the afternoon, having to travel anywhere. So I think I made the right call. And we ended up having these kind of a prepped meal, kind of a with a, what was called a boxed lunch. It was really, really good. It was very good. Everybody loved the food. That was special thanks to Bella Catering at Events. And you can find information about them, Bella, B-E-A-A, cateringandevents.com. They did a fantastic job. And I'll be probably writing some stuff up for them on social media and stuff, because they did a fantastic job, even though they're associated with the hall that we did not put it on, but still utilize them as my cater for the event. And did have some technical hiccups, little laptop stuff, because my equipment's outdated, and just some minor issues. But I always have a backup plan, and that's one of the best things you could do if you're going to plan one of these things. Have a good solid plan, but also have a backup plan, because you're going to need it. I had a backup plan on locations to have this thing. I had a backup plan on food. I had a backup plan on speakers, a backup plan on technology. Everything had a backup plan, and you have to have that in order to be successful, because sometimes you may go two or three plans deep on some stuff. But all in all, fantastic time, and a huge thanks to all the speakers that were involved. Aaron Clark, Scott Sukel, Colin Schneider, Audrey Hamilton. She did a fantastic job. Just kind of took it for granted that she was ready to go, and she was going to not even break a sweat, but I guess she was a little nervous, but you would have never noticed, because she did a fantastic job, and a lot of people were really curious about what she was speaking about with the Presque Isles State Park UFO, and I thought she did fantastic. Brandon Masullo, a lot of people were interested in Brandon's work and huddled around his table. He did pretty good. He did very good. And Amy Boo, she did a fantastic job talking about Bigfoot in Ohio, a woman's perspective. Very happy I reached out to her and made her a part of this event. She really, really was a very special addition to this entire lineup. Ron Murphy. Ron had a kind of a last minute kind of business thing happen during the middle of the week, and I didn't want to really talk about it or make anything big about it. I readjusted the schedule and allowed him to be able to be a speaker, but not be the last speaker, so that he would have a chance to sell some of his books. And I allowed Greg Faketic, who was on my list of backup speakers, I put him on the list as a speaker, And he talked about Paranormal 101, Pareidolia, Orbs, and Shadows, which is a very interesting presentation, the kind of thing that I would do and I've done, actually. A lot of the pictures he actually used as references to stuff, I had used the same one. So I found that very entertaining and very educational as well. He did a good job of explaining everything. And, you know, poor Ron, he didn't get in until about a little after 4 o'clock. So then he did his presentation from 5 to 6 and then had to basically turn around and leave because we did have some weather coming in. It started to snow and the roads weren't all that great. But thank you, Mother Nature. I guess Mother Nature is another person I need to thank because it didn't start snowing until right at the end of the event. And it could have been much worse being in February. So I really, really lucked out with that. And again, the reason why it was in February was because of the cost. It would have cost me quite a bit more to have it during any other part of the year. You're in competition with wedding receptions and a lot of other parties. So, yeah, you have a better chance of securing a location if you do it off season, which is the reason why I did that. And last but not least, huge thanks to my wife. She did a fantastic job. Really helped out a lot with getting flyers put up and talking about it locally and getting stuff to people so that they were aware of what was going on. She also made a lot of last-minute stuff to help things be a little bit more in line with the communication aspect that I wanted to convey with stuff and getting schedules copied and everything for people's tables. So they were well-informed as to what was going on because that's also very important that everybody knows who's coming up next. Nothing's worse than sitting there having to ask your neighbor who's coming up next. So, you know, planning and execution and having backup plans is my three biggest things here. But it was a fun time, a fun event, and we'll have to stay tuned to see if I'm going to do it again. But you never know. I've got so many other people that want to speak, that want to do this next year that I can almost put together two really good lineups. But if I do it again, it would be the same kind of thing, 7 or 8 speakers, one day, not going to get carried away with it, but we'll see. Not going to commit yet. But all in all, it was a great time at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference over the weekend. And looking at the schedule, I added a few more and I've subtracted a few more from the schedule. Obviously, there was quite a bit of stuff that happened over the weekend. And you can check that out at paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. And if there's stuff missing, events that you know about that I don't have on there, you can let me know. Just shoot me an email, find me on social media, Facebook, Twitter, whatever works. You can also, if you go to paranewsinsider.com, there's an about/contact link there at the top. You can get a hold of me directly via email. I'll get that email pretty fast, and I'll get this situated for you. Check out the event, make sure it's something that I think is going to be worth for my audience to check out, and we'll get it on there. And I don't just do conferences, conventions, not just for ghosts, UFOs, and cryptozoology, but I also put stuff on there if it's a class or anything like that. I've been known to do that in the past. So if you have anything like that, yeah, feel free. There's a whole bunch. There's a ton of ghost conferences coming up all the way through November. So check those out. A bunch of UFO events, not as many obviously as the ghost stuff. And the cryptid event seems like it's expanding quite a bit. The second annual Nebraska Bigfoot Conference was this weekend, and nothing too big came out of that. But there is quite a bit of Bigfoot stories in the news, which is what we're going to start talking about right now, because you came here for the news, right? And obviously, you probably heard about this lawsuit thing coming up. Somebody else has stepped forward and decided to sue over this stuff. You probably saw the headlines, all the stories floating around. One headline says, quote, woman suing state government following encounter with 3 Bigfoots, with an S, caught on camera, unquote. I don't like the Bigfoots. really annoying. It's just Bigfoot. It's like Colin Schneider made a comment. It's like deer. It's not deers. You don't say deers. It's just deer. But I don't know. Well, you might have thought, well, gosh, you're somebody else suing. No, it's another person. Someone else suing over the existence of Bigfoot in the United States. Well, kind of, sort of. Yes, it's another name attached to it, but it's really just people jumping on the bandwagon, which is exactly what's going on here. A woman named Claudia Ackley is taking action against the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the state's Natural Resources Agency after purportedly encountering a few Bigfoot last year during a hike. And during this hike, she claimed to have been, now this is her words, not mine, face to face with an 800-pound Bigfoot. And that was during, again, a hike with her 11 and 14-year-old daughters. Now, face to face with an 800-pound Bigfoot. Okay, got that? Good. Remember that. So confusingly, she states that the Bigfoot was said to be 30 feet up in a tree. Face to face with a Bigfoot that is 30 feet up a tree? Not sure how that's possible unless she's 30 feet tall. State officials believe what Claudia encountered was actually a family of bears, especially since they were, well, up a tree. I mean, who's ever heard of a Bigfoot family climbing trees? Granted, there are quite a few photos and videos of Bigfoot in trees, but it's not a traditional thing. It's just more or less people see dark shapes in trees that just automatically jump to the conclusion that it's, well, Bigfoot. And she's joined forces, obviously, with Todd Standing, who has made an attempt to sue various Canadian provinces, cities, and states over the existence of Bigfoot. And interestingly enough, if you read these stories, you'll find out that even Todd Standing was not too convinced of Ackley's sighting initially, which took place in the populated San Bernardino Mountains, which isn't exactly known as a Bigfoot hotspot. But after viewing Ackley's daughter's video and, well, probably realizing that he could use some help, decided to allow her to join forces. Now, it should be noted that Claudia Ackley is a long-standing Bigfoot researcher with over 20 years in the field. Well, she claims, 20 years in the field. All right, and this is going to get bad. Now, I'm just going to throw it out there. I'm sure I'll get hate mail, but I don't care. 20 years in the field, and her best evidence she's ever collected for Bigfoot came at the hands of her 11-year-old daughter. Ouch. Well, it will be this evidence, along with Standing's purported hair that he's collected, DNA, fingerprint, and track samples, along with the support of wildlife biologists, wilderness experts, and police forensics officers to testify on their behalf, and will also include Dr. Jeff Meldrum and Bob Gimlin. Yes, that Bob Gimlin of the famous Patterson-Gimlin film. Now, Todd Standing says, quote, "If this goes to court, we will win easily. It's not a joke. The best wilderness experts in the world are coming out to testify. It's amazing," unquote. Well, I don't think it's going to be a slam dunk. It's not a joke, and that's the sad thing here. As much as I'd love to see Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Yeti, Yeren, and all of Bigfoot cousins show up to court to help prove the existence of this, I just don't think this is the right approach. I mean, despite their purported mountain of evidence, it's really not enough to stand up in court, let alone the court of public opinion. I mean, that's what evidence is. Evidence is something that would stand up in the court of law, and that's where they're going to be, in the court of law. And this could get really messy. This could get very, very downright embarrassing for the entire field. Now, to me, I mean, again, this is kind of mean, but this is just how I feel. This sounds to me like a bunch of children trying to convince their parents that the monster under the bed is real. And they may have just as much luck proving that leprechauns, unicorns, and fairies exist in the woods of the well as Bigfoot. Standing on Ackley's assertion that by the states ignoring Bigfoot as a real creature, it's hurting their credibility and livelihood. That's absolutely ridiculous. And some of their statements I honestly find offensive, especially as a paranormal researcher. And anybody who out there who considers themselves a paranormal researcher, if I were you, I would start sending this guy some really heavy hate mail. He needs to hear this. In an article in the San Bernardino Sun, it says, quote, the lawsuit alleges the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and the State Natural Resources Agency have been derelict in their duty by not acknowledging the existence of Sasquatch species, despite a mountain of documented and scientific evidence. It has a chilling effect on the study of Sasquatch, considered illegitimate and neglected to the category of paranormal research. And that's in quotes. It has damaged Ackley's livelihood, public image, and credibility, as well as others dedicated to the study of the bipedal hominid, according to the lawsuit, unquote. So I enjoy ghost investigation as well as UFO and cryptid research. And I mean, for me, cryptid research has a little more tangible potential because these are real creatures, physical animals. Now, I'd never say it's a more credible field since nothing of any of us are researching or investigating is recognized by science as a whole or being real at all. So it's really ignorant for standing to assume that Bigfoot researchers should be legitimized and held in a higher regard based solely on their own personal belief of their own evidence collected. It's bad enough that Bigfooters, UFO researchers, and ghost investigators have historically never gotten along. I mean, this is just adding fuel to the fire. Why would you call out another anomalous research area? You're no better. It's not. Furthermore, when this lawsuit is dismissed and Standing and Ackley become the laughingstock of the legal system in multiple states and counties, who will they blame? Who will they blame when they're blacklisted from this field? Well, you know what? The honesty is, they won't be. No one's going to blacklist them. They're going to be heroes, even when they embarrass everybody and they make this take one more notch down. And you're going to take paranormal research down with you. Even though you've already knocked them down a notch, you're going to fall just as low. Now, how will this affect Dr. Jeff Meldrum and especially Bob Gimlin's legacy? I guess everyone wants attention and everyone just wants to be believed. But you can't force evidence to say things that it just doesn't. Compelling? Sure, I'll give you compelling. But will it prove anything in the court of law? Absolutely not. There is no way any of this stuff individually has enough weight to do anything. And just because you can grab a shovel and shovel up a bunch of garbage and pile it up doesn't mean that it's any better than any of the individual pieces of garbage that are on that pile. It's not. I don't care what former president claimed they saw something and wrote it in a book. Where's your proof? Where's your evidence that it actually was him that did that? Where's any of this proof of anything? DNA evidence. Oh, your police forensics expert here is only an expert in human stuff. He has no degree with animals. So how does he tell a smear of a bear over the smear of a human being? He can't, because he barely know anything about bears. So all this stuff is easily poked, easily prodded, easily torn apart, easily shredded in the court of law. They don't stand a chance. And that's not just from watching court TV shows. This is reality. It's just because you have a belief, you're not going to convince the judge, and you're not going to demand that somebody from a city is going to go spend 3 months in the woods with you so you can convince them. Daniel Perez, a Bigfoot researcher and speaker at last weekend's Nebraska Bigfoot Conference, said, quote, "I can't believe the courts would acknowledge something like this. I think the evidence is lacking. I think he may have a bad case of Bigfootitis because he wanted attention. I think the whole focus of why he's doing it is to draw attention to his Netflix movie he wants to sell," unquote. Some pretty good points there that I agree with. Standing is really nothing more than the latest version in a long line of people that use deception to prove their beliefs to the bigger world. And if you've watched his Netflix show, I don't know. Standing's attempts at taking people out to see Bigfoot, it's just really him just trying to convince people through circumstantial evidence. And again, when watching his Netflix show, I couldn't help but think that some of that stuff might have been staged by others during the night. It's just too weird that you're just going to walk right up to a certain area and you're going to find exactly what you wanted to find. It just doesn't work like that. Now, this will certainly end up being, I'm going to say it, probably one of the most embarrassing situations seen in this field. Maybe not of all time, but of certainly recent times, going back to the Bigfoot, frozen Bigfoot with the possum guts thrown on it debacle back in 2008 with a couple of other known hoaxers. It's going to be bad. It's going to be bad. But what's going to be even worse to me personally, how aggravated I'm going to be when I see when it's just brushed aside by the Bigfoot field. No one's going to even – it's not going to bother anybody. And these people would be vaulted as heroes for making such a big stink about it, even though it's an embarrassment. It's a large black eye against those that are actually doing some decent work out there, some legitimate work out there trying to put things together properly. Now, I've been told to do your work thoroughly, keep your integrity, and always push forward. If you ever do anything beyond compelling, that work will speak for itself, and you will never be forced to try and convince anyone of anything. Now, another ridiculous aspect of this lawsuit is that Bigfoot should be viewed as an endangered species and also a danger to the citizens in areas they're purportedly living in. Well, sure, people are frequently killed by Bigfoot. Well, it happens all the time, right? No, it doesn't. Strangely, the only attacks anyone ever hears about, what you can't see is my finger quotes, the only attacks anyone ever hears about are the anecdotal accounts by Bigfoot researchers. And if there were a rampant threat by these creatures, this would have surely led to their discovery, right? And this statement alone and their account will certainly be their undoing. If I can figure this out and I can turn it around on them, you sure don't think that a judge or another lawyer is going to be able to figure that out? Calling something an endangered species that doesn't even exist nor have any knowledge, understanding about living numbers means what it means for survival, needs of space, and certainly a multitude of other factors clearly shows the lack of understanding of environmental and animal science and those involved in this lawsuit. It's just not how it works, folks. There's no facts and information to back up anything about being endangered. You got to have numbers. That's how they determine those things. You don't just say, well, we don't see it, so it's got to be endangered. It's not how it works. And get your popcorn ready. Claudia Ackley has a hearing scheduled for March 19th. In San Bernardino, California. So it's coming up quick. Not even a month. So this is going to hit. It's going to be big. It's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. Get your popcorn ready. It's going to be a good show. And she's going to be going before Judge David Cohn. And this is just one of the first steps in legal action about all this stuff. And, you know, let's go back real quick to Claudia's sighting. So let's just speculate. If she's got a Bigfoot trapped up a tree, why didn't she wait until they climbed down to get definitive proof on video? Instead of coming back months later and trying to convince a court of law with a pile of circumstantial information disguised as facts. Now, she did claim that she called 911 and was told it was more likely a bear. Now, I would have loved to have heard this phone call. It should be administered as evidence. I mean, this is what you do. A good chunk of your life, you're a Bigfoot researcher, and you're out in the field doing what you're supposed to do, and you run away scared. You don't get the evidence. You could have proven the existence of Bigfoot. Your 11-year-old daughter would have been more famous than you, and you ran away. And now you're blaming somebody else. It never ceases to amaze me that the people that are purportedly respected and longtime researchers in a specific field would run away from the quarry they feel so strongly exist. Wow. Granted, and we're going to talk a little about that situation, being, you know, saying what you would do in a situation versus what you would actually do. We're going to talk about that in a later story, but I don't know. Maybe you could tell I'm a little annoyed by this. It's really annoying. And there's a number of stories that are actually saying that they have a lot of good points. There are no good points for the story. And no sane judge would not just toss this out. So, like I said, we've got about a month until the hearing in San Bernardino. You're tuned into WCJV Digital Broadcasting from Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking Bigfoot. We're talking lawsuits. We're talking embarrassments. And I get too carried away here. Let me get a link thrown there down there in that chat room so it doesn't land on somebody's head. And this story is getting worldwide attention, folks. This isn't just a U.S. thing or a local thing. The United Kingdom, Europe is seeing this. Australia is talking about this. This is a big deal. And if this blows up, this is going to be really, really – and it's going to blow up. I'm not even – this is going to be bad. It's going to be bad. But yeah, there's the link in the chat room. So if you're live in the chat room, you'll get information about this. And if you want to see, well, there was a link to a website that had the whole entire lawsuit was embedded or actually scanned pretty much. That's been removed. I don't know why or what's going on, but it's been removed from the internet. But I do have another story that actually has it embedded within the story. It's on gizmodo.com, and I'll also put that link in the chat room so you can actually read the document, which is important. It's one thing to get this from the media, but it's another thing to read the verbiage for yourself. It's quite embarrassing, to be honest. There are no good points. I don't care what anybody says. Now, there's also been an update on the British Columbia version of the lawsuit filed by Todd Stanning, where he, quote, accused the provincial government of damaging his livelihood and credibility by the non-recognition of Sasquatch. I don't know where they come up with that stuff. The government responded and filed a statement on January 25th at the New Westminster Registry. They deny Stanning's version of the alleged facts and, quote, denies that the plaintiff suffered or continues to suffer any loss, damage, or expense as alleged in the notice of civil claim, unquote. And I think part of this is that while Stanning might think that his Netflix movie adds to his claims, he's trying to use that as his big piece of evidence. I really think that's actually getting his documentary on there is actually working against him in this case. I mean, come on. It's not if he's not profiting from all this attention and from this documentary running since early January on the digital video service. So he's making money from that. Now, if you also pay any attention to Todd Stanning and you do any research at all, took me 2 minutes to figure this one out. He still claims to be taking people out into the Canadian wilderness to encounter Bigfoot with a $4,800 price tag per person. suffering? Well, a judge will assess the case and determine if this particular individual case in British Columbia can proceed to trial. And I almost kind of hope it does. And I hope that Standing has to pay for all of these proceedings, because it's not fair that the Canadian public and the American public are going to have to flip the bill for this guy. I just think it's ridiculous. Anyway, throw that bookmark also in the chat room for you guys to check that out about the update on the British Columbia debacle. I don't know what else you can call this thing. And speaking of hoaxes, an East Glacier, Montana business owner will no longer have the Bigfoot Projects Investments Company as a partner in building a 7-story, 100-room hotel near the entrance to Glacier National Park. And if you rewind and you go back and you listen to when I first talked about this story, you would know that I told you this was going to happen. Bigfoot Projects Investment Company is headed by longtime Bigfoot researcher as well as longtime known Bigfoot hoaxer. And I vowed I would never say his name on the show. This would probably be the second or third time since I vowed never to say his name, but I'll say it anyway. Tom Biscardi, as the leader of this Bigfoot Projects Investments Company, if you want to call it that. The goal was for the Biscardi-owned organization to buy the property and develop the hotel, which would include the, quote, largest Bigfoot museum in the world, unquote, along with a theater that would have Las Vegas-style Elvis Presley and Michael Jackson musical shows. I'd have gone just for that. Now, the acquisition of the property was planned to occur through the transfer of $6 million in stock in the Bigfoot company. However, the story points out an interesting fact, which more than likely led to the dissolving of the project, where it says, quote, according to a report filed to the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission on December 19th, Bigfoot Projects Investments ended October 2017 with $292 in cash and uncertainty about its future, unquote. However, the chief financial officer of Bigfoot Projects Investments states that they will try to find other land in Montana to utilize as their base of operation for trying to find Bigfoot. Of course, they will also try to find a way to make money from trying to find Bigfoot while trying to find Bigfoot. Yeah, it's confusing, but that's what they're trying to do. Yikes. And the link for that story also in the chat room. So if you're listening in the chat room, you get all this information. And yeah, some of these links you'll be able to find just by searching. But a lot of these stories, I've done a little bit more research and dig into it and get you some really important links. And not all these stories are really mainstream stuff. But yeah, I just want you to be able to actually read about them if you want to read about them and get a little bit of more facts and information about them as well. Now, you might be aware also some other big news happening over the weekend. The Marvel movie Black Panther opened last Thursday and has made about $242 million domestically and about $427 million worldwide. And this shattered a ton of box office records. Now, according to Vanity Fair, Black Panther, the fifth highest opening for a film ever. And a record it hit within its first 3 days by notching a smooth $201.8 million. It's the third highest gross in the history for a four-day opening weekend, according to Box Office Mojo. It's also the highest opening of all time for a film in February, as well as a film released over President's Day weekend, handily crushing the $152 million record previously set by Deadpool. That was a pretty good one, too. if you like that sort of stuff, which I do. And sorry, DC fans, with the $242 million collected in just 4 days, it's already earned more than the Justice League movie did during its entire domestic run, which was about $228.6 million. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the Black Panther movie and how it's beyond wonderful, and it's, you know, Rotten Tomatoes scored it the second highest movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That was a major slip up there. I actually had the chance. I know I was very, very busy over the weekend with the convention, but I took 2.5 hours out of my life and I went to see it because I didn't know when I was going to be able to have any time to see it after pretty much this weekend. Starting a new job yesterday, which has been really, really interesting. Going from running around all day, doing a lot of physical work, to just basically sitting around all day and doing a lot of mental work, which I'm very happy to do. And not really sure of when I would actually have time to go see this thing, actually working normal hours instead of ridiculously early hours. So I wanted to go and see it and just see the hype. Now, I don't think it was the greatest Marvel movie ever filmed or put on screen, but it's certainly very magical for a lot of different things. It's obviously been previously mentioned out there in the media, and I do think it's really worth watching, even if you're not really into the superhero movies. It's a very special movie, and highly recommend that. Now, why are we talking about movies? Why are we talking about Black Panther? Well, the namesake creature that is associated with the movie, that's been getting a lot of attention lately. A lot of articles have been popping up that tried to answer the question about what a Black Panther actually is. And some of them do pretty good. Some of them not so good. And I did a presentation last summer in anticipation of this movie on the very topic of Black Panthers. And it was a very interesting topic because I normally just talk basic stuff of this and of that. And I was actually able to go and talk about Black Panthers, which was a lot of fun to do that. And essentially, I know I've explained this before in a previous show, but basically these cats are black because of what's called melanism. And it's essentially dark pigment, which is melanin in excess. And it's pretty much the exact opposite of albinism, you know, being an albino. And for cats, it's pretty much an adaptive technique they use in heavy or dark forests. And of cats, it mostly occurs in leopards. And technically, well, Black Panther is not a type of cat. It's not a species. It refers to any black or melanistic variant of the Panthera species. And that includes lions, tigers, jaguars, leopards, and snow leopards. But the lion and tiger have never appeared melanistic. So not one we talk about. So it's basically down to jaguars and leopards. And leopards live in Asia and Africa, mostly Asia, but also in Africa. And leopards are in the Americas, South America and North America, as well as Central America. And they I don't think any have ever been recorded to be melanistic north of essentially Central America for the most part. Just it's a place called the Isthmus of Tehuantepec. That's it's north of the Panama Canal. It's a little area where Central America kind of squeezes there, the Gulf of Mexico and the Pacific Ocean. And they have never been known to be melanistic north of that, north of those heavy jungles that occur in towards of North South America or Central America in that area. And, you know, everyone just assumes, well, they say, well, mountain lions. These are mountain lions that people are seeing. Well, mountain lions have never been observed being melanistic in the wild or in captivity ever. And, you know, mountain lions have been, they live all over North America, all through South America. It's one of the most widest range cats in the world. And you would think that if they're going to appear melanistic, they're going to appear melanistic the same place that the leopards would as well, down there in the thicker jungles, darker areas, but they don't. They're about the same color. So that's kind of your backdrop there on the melanistic cats, Black Panthers, if you will. And despite Black Panthers not being found in the United States or even North America for that matter, there's still some animals, some cats. Bobcats have been known to be melanistic, extremely rare. Most of them, I think all but one case was in Florida. And well, a lot of other species of animals like squirrels and things like that have appeared melanistic, but it's pretty rare. Deer? Is it deers? No, it's just deer. Deer have also appeared melanistic. Melanistic. And again, despite Black Panthers not being found in the United States or even North America for that matter, there's still people reporting them all over the place, especially in my neighboring state of Pennsylvania, where a story was recently published on this ongoing topic. And whenever I speak in Pennsylvania, which is lately it's been a few times a year, I'm always told about at least one Black Panther sighting, or two, or more. Now, Penn Live published an article titled, quote, "Black Panthers in Pennsylvania, reports continue to surface," unquote. Just yesterday, they published this, and more than likely, they're playing off the record-setting movie and the urban legends surrounding black cats seen in the woods. And within the story were, again, some of the basic facts on mountain lions as well as melanism, like I just talked about, as well as a few stories of people seeing these creatures in the wild. And it's always interesting, too, to read the comments. It's always funny. But it's interesting to see a Pennsylvania article about this, about mountain lions, or I should say Black Panthers existing in Pennsylvania. So let me throw that. Boom. And I'm going to go, let's see, other news real quick. And you remember that question I asked you at the beginning of the show? Do you? Maybe you don't. I don't think you do. Anyway, I was talking about also my teaser for the show on Facebook and Twitter. I asked, I said about the second largest question plaguing mankind. And the first would be, what happens when we die? I think so. I think that's a rational ranking. And the second one would be, is there life out there? And I asked, how would you react to the news of the discovery of an alien species? And, you know, we can all make assumptions. We can all kind of guess or say, well, I would do this or I would do that, or I think other people would do this, or I think other people would do that. We don't really know. There's no way to test that. And I'm always skeptical when I hear somebody say that they would react a certain way in a certain situation. Well, if I saw Bigfoot, I would do this. I mean, do you remember the Dude Run incident during the episode of Ghost Hunters, the television show years ago? No? Well, people quite frequently act in a way that we assume that we would react differently to the same situation, despite the overwhelming odds we would probably do the same thing if we were in their shoes. And this next story tackles a situation that's been looked at for decades. How would one react to the news that aliens have been discovered? Now, some people think, I kind of feel this way, that people would begin to panic. They would start looting. They would be rioting. They would be stealing TVs and shoes. And even the potential for mass suicides or even other unimaginable horrors of death and destruction. scientists, after some research, they actually feel that the reaction would be more in line with meh. Like we wouldn't even care. No big deal. Professor Michael Varnum of Arizona State University studied the reactions to stories in the media about proposed findings of extraterrestrial life, including a 1996 story that NASA may have found life in a meteorite, as well as the recent story of Tabby's star that some proposed an alien megastructure was the cause behind the rear dimming of the star over time. Many participants were seemingly underwhelmed about the idea and felt that others in society would be even more underwhelmed by the idea. It's an underwhelming story here. I think this nonchalant attitude is based on the fact that microbial or simple life forms will more than likely be discovered versus the movie and book versions of intelligent creatures hell-bent on taking over Earth and eliminating humans or turning us into batteries. I think that if intelligent life were announced, this would be a very different conversation. I think there'd be a little bit more chaos and mayhem, especially if there was a UFO put on CNN for all the world to see that was hovering over major metropolitan city. I'm pretty sure that people wouldn't be like, ho-hum, what's on Netflix tonight? Professor Lewis Dartnell, an astrobiologist from the University of Westminster who was not involved in this study, welcomed the findings by stating, quote, "It's encouraging that the study has found people are likely to be enthusiastic about the discovery of microbial life beyond the Earth. We're unlikely to ever encounter intelligent spacefaring aliens in our galaxy, but there are a number of upcoming missions that could detect life of Martian bacteria or signs of Martian bacteria," unquote. Well, I don't think he read this story. Likely to be enthusiastic. It's not really what the story said. But anyway, we'll see if there's life out there. Well, there's certainly not a whole lot of intelligent life here on Earth. That's why all the satellite dishes are always pointed out into space looking for intelligence. I had a book of the week. I didn't even look to see if I've talked about this. I don't think I have. So I'm going to do it anyway. I don't care. If I'm wrong, if I've already done it, Dita will probably point it out and tell me, hey, you already did that one. But I've got a book of the week here. It's called The Paranormal, Who Believes, Why They Believe, and Why It Matters. This book is published by Eric Good. And keep your mouth shut. Anyway, there's the link in the chat room, and I'll throw the image I'll cover there in the chat room as well. And it's a weird looking picture. It's a weird looking cover. And if you've ever seen it, you've seen it because it looks really, really weird. It's paranormal. Paranormalish. And on the back of the book here, it says ghosts, psychics, and communicating with the dead, UFOs, angels, ESP, astrology. These and other astounding phenomena are accepted as valid by a substantial portion of the public. Why do so many members of our scientifically sophisticated society believe in assertions that scientists have roundly and almost unanimously rejected? And what does expressing such beliefs mean for the lives of those who do? Unlike many books on the paranormal, which are focused on debunking or verifying such beliefs, in this book, Eric Good is interested in explaining paranormal belief as a sociological phenomena. Who believes? Why and with what consequences? And I bought this book, Benjamin Radford referred this book to me for when I was doing research for my book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Researcher, that I published earlier, July of last year. And so this is kind of a book that I bought merely for research into the belief systems of people with UFOs, but I found it very interesting After I got done just researching that aspect, I went back and reread the whole thing. And it's very, very interesting because just like the cover says, it's not really skeptical, but it's not a believer book either. It's basically just giving you all that information and kind of like more or less letting you decide how you feel about it. But it does really push toward the skeptical side because it's really demonstrating that there is a lot of pseudoscience and there's a lot of belief systems at work here. And it really does show the work behind why it would say that or why it would push in that direction. And, dozens of references here that would back up that work and information. And it makes a lot of sense. So it does kind of put these belief systems into, I don't want to say boxes, but into understandable, explainable potentials, and doesn't really just try to wipe it away. It just says, well, here's information, and this is what's believed by a lot of people, but here's the information behind it. It's not meant to debunk it. It's just meant to bring you the information and allow you to really draw your own conclusions. But it's basically put as a sociological book. It's not meant to, again, debunk or confirm. And that's what I really liked about this book. And it's not really for you to help you decide about this stuff, about various paranormal things. And it does include a lot of stuff on UFOs, but also a lot of stuff on ghosts, conspiracy theories, astrology, psychic predictions, Nostradamus type stuff. And it's interesting too. It has a whole chapter on creationism, which is weird. Psi phenomena, UFOs, a little bit more there on religion. But it's really neat too because it looks at a lot of the cultural things behind paranormal beliefs, which is really what I find interesting. And it also has a pretty thick chapter there also on scientific thinking, where it kind of looks and evaluates our thought process on the paranormal through the eyes of science and kind of goes back and forth with some concepts, which I found really, really interesting as well. But it's a very good book. I mean, obviously, it's not just your fireside reading kind of book. It's valuable if you're doing research or you want to figure out why people believe what they believe. And, you know, obviously it's a little bit more of a scholarly type book, but I think it's very important for people who maybe want to look at the skeptical side of things, who want to balance belief systems with science, or at least understanding why we believe what we believe as far as the paranormal is concerned. I think it's very critical in order to balance out your beliefs and your perceptions and your thoughts about things. Especially if you're a researcher, I think it's very good to ground yourself. And I don't mean putting yourself in a corner, time out. I'm just saying ground yourself as a researcher and look at all angles and all sides because it's very, very important. And one weird thing I saw about this on the I always use Amazon links, but it's weird because it says that it was published in 1750. That would be great, but it wasn't. According to mine, it says 2011. Well, I'm sorry, 2012. The cover image is copyright 2011. So it's really not that old. It's only 6 years. It's not. It wasn't made back in the pirate days. So it's fairly recent, and a lot of great information. Again, it's not just for your everyday a ghost story type of book, but it's a really good researcher type of book if you're wanting to get into and understanding all of these things behind the phenomena of belief behind paranormal phenomena. And wow, with that, it's already at the top of the hour. I can't believe this. This is got to be one of the fastest shows I've ever done. Can't believe it's done already. Wow. This maybe it's being here late. And I hope you guys like or you enjoy the show being on an hour later if you're listening live. If not, probably doesn't change anything for you if you're listening to this recorded. But either way, I really do appreciate you tuning into the show tonight and any other time that you've ever tuned into the show. It means a lot to me, and I appreciate it. I honestly do, because I do look at numbers. I don't survive. I don't live and die, or I don't go crying and, oh, only 400 people listen to my show. Boo-hoo. I'm just making sure that I'm doing, putting out a quality product that people are actually interested in. Otherwise, I wouldn't waste my time. But stats show that people are listening, so I'm going to continue to do it, and I enjoy doing it anyway, so I'm still going to do it. As long as I have at least 5 listeners, I guess I'll continue to do it. But anyway, again, if you have any information about paranormal conferences or conventions, you want to see something that's not already on the website, or you want me to mention it, let me know. You can email me at insider@paranewsinsider.com or go to paranewsinsider.com and look on the website there. There's a contact form. You can get a hold of me. But in the interim, I want to thank you again for listening. A big thanks to Cindy for the production of the show, to Dita for her work behind the scenes, and again, for you, the listener. I'll see you next week. But for now, keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.